C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 20. Oktober 2022 hat die 20. OFSE Development Lecture als hybride Veranstaltung stattgefunden, live im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung und online. Zum Thema Food for All – What it takes to secure global supplies with nutrition and basic needs. In dieser Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir darüber. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Plank. Die Development Lecture 2022 wurde in Kooperation zwischen der OFSE, der Österreichischen Forschungsstiftung für internationale Entwicklung und dem VIDC, dem Vienna Institute for International Dialogue and Cooperation, organisiert. Zum Thema Food for All – What it takes to secure global supplies with nutrition and basic needs. Der Hintergrund zum Thema: Extreme Preisschwankungen auf den globalen Rohstoff- und Energiemärkten, Dürren in weiten Teilen Afrikas, Versorgungsengpässe bei Getreide und Düngemitteln im Zuge des Ukraine-Krieges sowie bei medizinischen Gütern während der Covid-19-Krise. Die globalen Turbulenzen haben in den letzten Monaten und Jahren zugenommen. Vor allem werfen sie die grundsätzliche Frage auf, wie lebensnotwendige Güter für alle gesichert werden können. Sind Waren- und Energiebörsen und andere Marktmechanismen nützliche Instrumente, um Angebot und Nachfrage zu koordinieren? Oder führen sie zu Preisinstabilitäten und tragen damit zu Versorgungsunsicherheiten bei? Was braucht es, um die zukünftige Versorgung mit Nahrung und Energie sowie anderen Grundgütern vor dem Hintergrund der Klimakrise zu sichern? Welche nationalen und internationalen Politiken werden benötigt? Die Development Lecture hat Jomo Kwame Sundaram gehalten. Der Ökonom aus Malaysia war unter anderem Assistent bei den Vereinten Nationen, zuständig für wirtschaftliche Entwicklung, Abteilung für wirtschaftliche und soziale Angelegenheiten, DESA, und Stipendiat der Initiative for Policy Dialogue der Columbia University. Einleitend zur Development Lecture von Jomo Kwame Sundaram geht Franz Schmidjell vom VIDC zunächst auf die aktuelle Lage in Bezug auf die Nahrungsmittelversorgung ein und gibt dann einen Rückblick ins Jahr 2010.
The price of wheat, for example, increased by 130% within one year, especially in the global south, where especially the poorer people have to spend 50-70% of their income on food. This had disastrous effects. Reports about hunger riots have disappeared from the headlines. Hunger, however, remained. This introduction was used in 2010 on an event we organized on the same topic. And there was no Ukraine war at this time. There was a similar situation in 2011, 12, and 2014. We think it's important to look again into the structural causes of food insecurity, of malnutrition or undernutrition and hunger, and also what would be possible alternative policies. Just to repeat, in 2010, our experts stressed this cause is responsible for these price volatilities, among others, the unregulated financial market and food speculation. The changed consumption patterns, especially the increase of meat consumption. And the use, or we can also, I would say, the misuse of corn, wheat, soybeans, and sugarcane for biofuels, especially in the US, but also in the European Union. The speakers this time criticized also the agricultural policies in the global south, which favored big corporation export and cash crop production and land grabbing at the expense of small scale farming. And above all that, and this time the speakers referred to the disastrous impact of climate crisis. So I'm very curious today what has changed and what is still the same, what hasn't changed.
So Franz Schmidjell vom VIDC einleitend. Zu Beginn seiner Development Lecture bringt Jomo Sundaram eine Definition von Hunger.
All figures on hunger probably a bit of an understatement,
because the definition is actually very strict. You have to be chronically hungry for a year to be considered hungry.
Sundaram kritisiert, wie die Nahrungsmittelversorgung gemessen wird.
We have to recognize that official traditional method of measuring hunger focuses on calorie intake. We don't have enough proteins, we don't have enough micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, it doesn't matter.
Sundaram nennt diese Unterversorgung versteckten Hunger. Wie schwierig es ist, Hunger zu bekämpfen, zeigt Sundaram am Beispiel seines eigenen Landes Malaysia und bringt anschließend zwei Positivbeispiele.
And in my own country, for example, I have been trying, without any success, to get the Ministry of Agriculture involved in discussions about nutrition. No success. One of the first places in the world to introduce a school feeding program was Japan, about a century ago. And who lives longer than anybody else in the world today? Japanese. If you think about what Lula achieved, he basically consolidated the different bolsas which were already created, expanded the scope of coverage of those bolsas, and integrated the relationship between attending school and getting a meal.
Versteckter Hunger werde gleichsam vererbt, so Jomo Sundaram.
If a girl child especially is compromised because of poor nutrition, her ability to reproduce is impaired, but more importantly, the children she bears will also suffer scars from her own impairment.
Gleichzeitig zeigen sich auch in ärmeren Ländern der Welt steigende Diabeteszahlen. Das liegt auch daran, dass sich etwa in Mittelamerika die Ernährungsgewohnheiten nach und nach ändern, hin zu mehr Fastfood und zu mehr Süßgetränken.
And we have a whole range of what I call diet-related non-communicable diseases. You know, the number of people suffering type 2 diabetes, for example, is a very, very serious problem. Not only in the rich countries, it's also happening in Central American countries, for example, and many other so-called middle-income countries. These are very, very serious issues, and I would say even in some many poor countries, these are issues. So we need to pay attention, far more attention to some of these matters.
In den letzten Jahrzehnten wären Bäuerinnen weltweit dazu übergegangen, mehr und mehr Cash Crops anzupflanzen, anstelle von Grundnahrungsmitteln für die eigene Versorgung, so Jomo Sundaram. Er verweist in der Folge auf weitere Einflüsse und strukturelle Probleme im Kontext mit Hunger, Krieg und Spekulation.
I think everybody now knows the food prices have generally gone up since then, but I want to emphasize that food prices have also come down more recently. And it's important to recognize that there was a huge, the major reason for the prices going up initially was speculative. But the kind of speculation this time is different from the time of speculation which sent food prices up in 2007, 2008. Because at that time, there was a shortfall mainly of rice production because China had lost more than 20% of its harvest to the brown hopper. And because only 6% of rice output is actually traded internationally, so that has a huge impact on prices. And then you speculate. Now, during the first decade of this century, there was a big increase in what was called financial investments options. So you're always searching for, to use the business jargon, you're searching for value. Okay. So what better example of value than commodities? Okay. Real, that's value. And it's much more fungible, you know, much more marketable than say real estate. It's not so easy to just buy and sell a real estate as you can sell commodities. And then you have these instruments of hedging, which had been developed in the 20th century, where you basically have futures and options markets available. And so this became a new class of assets of financial investments.
Insgesamt gibt es genügend Nahrungsmittel, sagt Jomo Sundaram.
Let's face it, there is enough food being produced to feed the world. It's not a question of there not being enough food. But there's a great deal of food losses, and losses are usually at the level of production, and the losses are higher in developing countries, undoubtedly, for a number of reasons. For example, you can produce your peanuts, but you cannot keep your peanuts dry. The aflatoxins develop, and this creates a range of problems of their own. And this, of course, has very important implications for the peanut farmers and so on and so forth. So there are a lot of food losses, and food losses are estimated to be in the range of about 30 to 35%. Then there are other losses relating to what is called food waste.
And this, by definition, this is a definitional issue, it's not my my analysis, but waste, by definition, is related to consumption. So, for example, if you produce food, food is ready to be consumed, it's available in the supermarkets, but let's say it exceeds the sell-by date. So in some countries, you're obliged to throw away that meat because it has exceeded the sell-by date. And likewise with other types of food and so on and so forth. This is one example of consumer waste, besides the waste you find in restaurants, for example, when you have a buffet, which is where people take much more because there's a strong incentive to take much more than you really are going to consume when you have a buffet. And then you throw away the excess food and so on and so forth. So these are some of the problems we face. But it's not the fundamental problem. So you have 30 to 35% food losses at production, mainly in developing countries, waste mainly at the level of consumption in the richer countries. Problem is not that there not being enough food. Even a relatively conservative observer like the head of the World Food Program, Josette Sheeran, who was the World George Bush's deputy USPR, United States trade representative, she made this observation during the time of the world food crisis, so-called world food crisis in 2007-2008.
Bevor Jomo Sundaram abschließend seine Einschätzung zur Lage der Welt gibt, macht er einen Blick zurück in die 1970er Jahre.
The last time the term stagflation was used during the late 1970s, but at that time there was an economic slowdown, especially after the Nixon withdrew from the Bretton Woods system. The Bretton Woods system was gone. There was international monetary chaos. My guru, Robert Triffin, called it international monetary non-system. And in that chaos, you had basically other inherent tendencies to contract. You didn't know what to expect next because there were no more rules. And so the result was contractionary. Of course, labor was largely blamed for it. Labor was supposedly more militant. Certainly, it's more militant then than it is now. But nonetheless, it was not such a powerful force to, you know, factually, it was wrong to blame it on labor. But in any case, it was done. And you then had Mr. Volcker coming in from 1979, 1980, 1981, pushing up interest rates to almost 20% overnight rates. Went up. Can you imagine 20% rates in the US? He successfully killed that inflation, but he basically wiped out the prospects for growth for much of the world, especially for African countries, which had borrowed heavily. And especially, of course, we all hear about the Latin American debt, which was much bigger. But for African countries, it was proportionately very, very significant. The result was the African and Latin American countries had to adopt structural adjustment programs, which basically condemned them to losing, in the case of Latin America, at least a decade. In the case of Africa, I would even argue almost a quarter century. We are now living in a very, very dangerous world. We are living in a very dangerous world where we do not recognize the other forms of warfare which are taking place, especially the economic warfare. And this is part of the reason why we are living in a very, very dangerous world. The implications for food and food fertilizer supplies and so on are are already quite well known. I just want to emphasize that we need to recognize that many of the old problems continue to exist today, but at the same time, we are now having to deal with a larger context where, in a sense, addressing some of those old problems is not going to do the trick. Far, far more is needed in terms of addressing some of the challenges which we have in the world today. And I think for this reason, if nothing else, we really need to begin to think about the dilemmas which we face in the world today. The dilemmas which not only the developing world, because in many ways, I've been in Europe for a week, and I never imagined I would ever come to a Europe like this. People who are unsure about whether they're going to be keep warm enough this winter and so on and so forth. This is a very different world which we are living in. And incentives for international cooperation are so abysmal.
Kommentiert wurde Sundarams Lecture von Sofia Monsalve Suarez von FIAN, dem Food First Informations and Actions Network. Sie wird in ihren Ausführungen auf Aspekte eingehen im Zusammenhang mit Food Security, die auf den ersten Blick nicht zu erwarten wären. auf patriarchale Strukturen und die Demokratisierung von Entscheidungsprozessen.
Perhaps you won't be surprised that we as FIAN, as a human rights organization, but also we as part of the food sovereignty movement, have a sort of cautious take on the global food system.
Denn den globalen Handel mit Nahrungsmitteln sieht Sofia Suarez als eines der Hauptprobleme in Bezug auf food security.
These national capacities and local capacities of food production were destroyed. And public institutions like for food reserves, for rural extension services, public distribution systems were largely dismantled and privatized. So it is not by chance that we see today really very large corporations controlling inputs, controlling distribution systems, and controlling also retail. So all this has been made. It were deliberate choices. So to shape food systems in a way that are really extremely dependent on global supply chains.
Corona und der Krieg in der Ukraine hätten gezeigt, dass diese Versorgungsketten fragil seien, sagt Suarez.
We have a global economic architecture, and I think I agree with Jomo on what he elaborated in terms of trade, in terms of finances, that it is extremely unjust and has concentrated simply too much wealth in few hands. So I would highlight that the problem of inequality, wealth concentration, but also the problem of land concentration, because we have been talking too much about food systems, but we have all forgotten about land. So land is highly concentrated worldwide, and this is of course the problem, because small scale farming is more or less on the path of extinction, and this is a problem, and this is connected also to what Jomo said, that we have diets and food habits which have been shaped by corporations, ultra processed foods, and I think there is a clear correlation between free trade changes of in habits, relying more on ultra-processed food, which has led to these massive problems with non-communicable diseases related to food. So all this is connected, and if we want to diversify foods, we need to strengthen, stop the ecological destruction, stop the destruction of biodiversity, restore many of these ecosystems, restore soil, health of soils, you know, clean water, clean air, and then find different ways of producing food, like for instance agroecology, which is much more healthy and just.
Als Reaktion auf Jomo Sundarams Development Lecture fügt Sofia Suarez ein strukturelles Problem zum Thema hinzu.
Jomo didn't talk about patriarchy, and I think it is very important to highlight. He said that women are responsible for agriculture in many, many countries, but I think patriarchy is really the problem, because we have an economic system which overexploits reproductive work, care work, and this is put on the shoulders of women and girls. The pandemic showed us again how important is this work, but how overexploited it is. And I think in agriculture, we also have an important care dimension, not only for feeding children and the elderly and the ill, but also for caring for ecosystems, for animals, for plants. And this is work which is extremely important, but it is hidden and overexploited. And I think also the corporate supply, global supply chains rely heavily also on women, on female work, but violence, sexual harassment and gender violence across the chain. I mean, you can talk with workers in plantations, tea plantations, flower plantations. These are all female workers. And we have testimonies, you know, we have heard many testimonies of these women, their salary, you know, access to water is conditioned to sexual favors. So this is really a massive problem, and it is very important. And just to finish, the other component that I think a structural determinant of the problems that we are seeing now related to the food crisis is simply lack of democracy. I think that this large concentration of power in the hands of corporations, but also of some countries, has led to a world and to a system where there are very few people in command deciding what is best for all of us. And I think as a human rights person, and as I said, as part of the food sovereignty movement, well, we believe in the principle of self-determination as communities and as peoples and nations. So therefore, we have the right to decide decide what agricultural and food system we want. And I think that we have seen that democratizing decision making is one of the first steps if you want to combat hunger. And I think the case of Brazil, the program of Fome Zero, John also related to that, had a very strong component of democratizing decision making.
Sagt Sofia Monsalve Suarez. Der zweite Kommentar zur Development Lecture kommt am 20. Oktober von Faith Lumonia. Sie ist Programmbeauftragte für wirtschaftliche Gerechtigkeit und Klimaschutz bei der Organisation Akina Mama wa Afrika in Kampala, Uganda. Ihre Arbeitsschwerpunkte sind vor allem Wirtschafts- und Klimagerechtigkeit.
For me, in terms of solutions, Sophia really unpacked the fact that, again, women are at the front line of this situation, and food insecurity does increase the burden of unpaid care and domestic work on women, because ultimately, because of the way society has decided to structure itself, it's women who do carry the burden and responsibility of providing food and ensuring that the family people do have access to the right nutritional requirements. And so in that regard, the solution really is for us to rethink and reimagine different ways of addressing the challenge. And for me today, I would like to propose what for us as Akina Mama refer to as the feminist approach, believing that when you think about feminism, it's really about centering the needs of those that are at the margins, of those that continue to be minoritized and marginalized. It's based on egalitarianism, and it rejects neoliberalism as a corrupt and abusive system that has simply facilitated underdevelopment. So with feminism focusing on prioritizing the interests of those that are most marginalized and placing emphasis on the need to protect not only human beings, but also the environment, and centering the needs of individuals is something that for us we are advancing. Also reflecting on, for instance, the fact that governments need to center the needs of their people, the needs of those that are most marginalized. One of the things that our government has in Uganda has been constantly pushing back on is the idea of providing subsidies, whether agricultural or fuel subsidies or whatever subsidies it may be, and claiming that these subsidies do affect the economics, realizing that, again, it's for them, it's really about centering the economics and profits, is something that we then question, because the responsibility of any state is to place their people at the center.
Zusammenfassend sagt Faith Lumonia von Akina Mama wa Afrika in Kampala, Uganda.
As I conclude, I placing emphasis on the ideals of social justice and collective public responses, definitely agree with the proposals around rethinking free trade and the ways in which it's been advanced as a magic bullet to addressing a lot of our problems, and then also definitely centering the most marginalized.
Ich frage Jomo Kwame Sundaram nach strukturellen Ursachen der gegenwärtigen Hungerkrise, denn 830 Millionen Menschen leiden aktuell unter Hunger, obwohl es an sich ausreichend Nahrung für alle gibt.
The current crisis which we face in the world today is due to the fact that many people do not have the means to provide, to secure enough food for themselves. Either they do not have access to enough land or other means to produce food, or they do not have access to enough income to be able to buy the food which they need. This is the major problem which we face today. Yet, we have been told for a long time that incomes have gone up, that poverty has gone down. But when we look at the data for food insecurity produced by the Food and Agriculture Organization, we find that those numbers do not correspond at all to the poverty data. There's something seriously wrong, because poverty data and the so-called poverty line, about 60% of that poverty line income threshold is supposed to be for food. So if there is this big disparity, there must be something wrong with our measurement. Part of the problem, of course, is that when we look at what is called food security, we are only focusing on calories. But we all know that humanity does not live by bread alone. And we need to think about other food requirements. And these other food requirements, micronutrients and so on, are things which transfer from generation to generation.
Abschließende Hinweise. Informationen zu allen Angeboten der ÖFSE findet man auf www.ofse.at. Zum VIDC informiert man sich auf www.vidc.org, zu Vieren auf www.vieren.at. Es gibt auch Sendungen von C3 Radio zu früheren ÖFSE Development Lectures, etwa zu jener von Kari Polanyi-Levit aus dem Jahr 2018. C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat und ständig als Podcast auf Spotify. Alle Angebote des C3 finden Sie auf www.zentrum3.at. Folgen Sie der ÖFSE bzw. C3 Radio bitte auch auf Facebook. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.